Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have on the show Dr. Anne Gager to talk about theistic evolution. Dr. Gager is Director of Science Communication and a Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. She is Senior Research Scientist at the Biologic Institute in Seattle. She received her bachelor's degree from MIT and her PhD from the University of Washington Department of Zoology. Dr. Gager held a postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard University, where her work was on the molecular motor kinesin. Her research at Biologic has focused on two areas: the limits of neo-Darwinism as a mechanism for change at the protein level, and evidence for the uniqueness of human origins. As Director of Science Communications, she is responsible for communicating the evidence of intelligent design to the wider public. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gager.
I'm glad to be here.
So I hear you just returned from Providence, Rhode Island. What was going on there?
There was a conference called the Evangelical Theological Society, a meeting of about 3,000 different people. Lasted 3 days. A different environment for me. I'm not used to hanging out with philosophers and theologians. But we were there to present a book, which is the reason I was there.
So is this the monster of a book that I've been hearing about?
Yes.
Theistic Evolution?
Yes, it's the gorgeous monster. The book is titled Theistic Evolution, a Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Critique. It weighs about 5 pounds, has over 1,000 pages. And that's why we call it the beautiful monster or the gorgeous monster.
So what is theistic evolution and how does this book address it?
That's a good question. Why do we need to address it? Theistic evolution can be taken in 3 ways, similar to the 3 definitions of evolution. It can be taken as having to do with God guiding things over time through change. And that's not controversial. I think that every theist would acknowledge that God has acted in the world over time to create change. We see evidence of change. God's involved. Second definition has to do with God using a guided process of evolution over time to create through common descent. And this is a view which is not necessarily contradictory to scripture. It just says that there is common descent among creatures. Theologians would disagree about whether there could be such a thing as common descent. Some people will say, no, we're created by kinds. But it's a legitimate point of view. The third view is the view that we critique, and that is the view that God may have used evolution to create everything, but we can't tell, that there is no direct evidence of design, and that his involvement may have been at the beginning by front-loading the information necessary for life, everything to evolve, or if he did intervene in any way during the course of evolution, he left no sign of it. So that's why we came together to write the book.
So how did Discovery Institute get involved?
The people who are putting the book together came to us because we have the largest collection of intelligent design scientists, people who work in the field who are interested in questions of how an intelligent designer might be necessary for explaining life as we see it, and who also deal with questions of why theistic evolution is not sufficient as an explanation.
So this book has 3 sections and 17 chapters on science alone. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. The first section is the section that I was mainly involved in editing along with Steve Meyer. We tried to make it as comprehensive as possible, which means we started off with an introduction. Steve laid out all the different chapters and how they tied together and gave those definitions of theistic evolution, which I gave. We began with a chapter by Doug Axe, similar in content to his book, but the title is 3 Good Reasons for People of Faith to Reject Darwin's Explanation of Life. And it's not a scientific chapter so much as it is a common sense chapter about why the layperson doesn't have to rely on scientific authority to make their judgments. Then there's a chapter by Steve Meyer on the source of biological form and information and how neo-Darwinism can't explain it. So then there's a chapter by Matti Laisala, who is a Finnish scientist, well-respected in his field of protein science. And he calls his chapter Evolution, a Story Without a Mechanism. And he elaborates on the work that he's done in protein evolution and how little he could accomplish, the kinds of changes that could be made and the kinds of changes that couldn't. And he demonstrates that the limits of actual evolution mean that you can't get very far. Chapter 4 is by James Tour, also a very eminent scientist. And he talks about how the chemical evolutionary mechanisms can't point towards a first life. That his basic thesis, and I think we'll talk about this later, is that the difficulty of making organic molecules means that it wouldn't ever happen by chance. Next chapter is by Winston Ewart, and he talks about computational models of evolution. His title is Digital Evolution, Predictions of Design. And he says, in summary, that these computational models can't prove evolution, but they do prove design. So it's a very interesting chapter. Chapter 6, The Difference It Doesn't Make, Why Front-Loaded Concepts of Design Fail to Explain the Origin of Biological Information. That's a title by Steve Meyer. He talks about whether it's reasonable to say that God could have front-loaded all the information necessary for the universe to develop. Number 7, DNA mutations cannot accomplish what neo-Darwinism requires. Care to guess who wrote that?
Jonathan Wells?
Yes, very good. Jonathan Wells. He goes through what the story of DNA is and genetic code, and then why it's not sufficient to explain what's necessary, and then hints at some other things that are necessary. Another chapter by Stephen Meyer and myself and Paul Nelson on the extended evolutionary synthesis. So this is a chapter that goes through all the proposed mechanisms that are supposed to make up for the lack of neo-Darwinism. And then a chapter on embryology by Sheena Tyler. She gives some really splendid examples of the complexity and elegance of development in different organ systems and spends a good bit of time showing why it won't work. So we've gotten through the first section of the first section. The next section I will skim through, we've got a chapter by Gunter Beckley and Stephen Meyer on the fossil record. First chapter by a paleontologist, woohoo! Then two chapters by Casey Luskin and Paul Nelson on universal common descent. One is a listing of all the problems, and the second one is a philosophical argument for why common descent is not an explanation that will work. Then we get to four chapters on human origins. Bang, bang, bang. We've got an introductory chapter, then a fossil record chapter, then a chapter on the genetic differences between chimps and humans, and then a chapter on a population genetics model. And the last chapter is by Christopher Shaw, who's one of the science editors, on the pressure to conform that leads to bias in science. And that's relevant to this whole question because it makes it very hard for scientists to be willing to take on the question of intelligent design. So there's your summary.
Well, it sounds like quite a thorough treatment. I had the opportunity to read the chapter by chemist James Tour, and would love to discuss that a bit. It sounds like he's talking about the origin of life and his work in the laboratory with synthetic chemistry. Could you tell us just a little bit more about what he concluded?
May I first say a little bit about what synthetic chemistry is?
Yes.
All right. Synthetic chemistry means starting with pure ingredients like formaldehyde or methane and combining them in the lab under controlled conditions, very controlled for temperature and what gases are involved and the procedure that's followed. in such a way as to try and make molecules of your own design. And it involves multiple steps, having to purify after each step. Sometimes when you find out your plan didn't work, backtracking and trying again. You hold in reserve things you made in the past in case you do have to backtrack to another starting point. All of these things require a lot of careful control and purifying of reagents. Now, what does that have to do with Origin of Life? Origin of Life scenarios don't have the luxury of purified reagents available to them anytime they want. Origin of Life scenarios don't have controlled reaction conditions. They don't have pure reagents available in just the right amounts. Origin of Life cannot isolate and purify products that it wants separate from all the other products that are made. It has none of the capabilities of a modern synthetic chemistry lab. So Jim knows intimately how difficult it is to build molecules. He also knows something of the chemistry involved in simple molecules that would be necessary for the first life, like pentose sugars. The reactions necessary to make pentose sugars are, it's just not possible to make the right kind of sugars without having contamination by other forms of the sugar. The best synthetic chemists have tried and failed. So a pentose sugar is necessary for building RNA and DNA, lots of basic compounds in the cell. Jim Tour says, even if you succeeded in building these sugars, they also decay. So you can build up sugars over a long period of time, but they won't stick around for the next step.
So you're telling me that the scientist who's able to build little tiny nano machines in his lab that are molecular machines says that you can't build the parts of a cell,
right?
Much less by chance.
Right. I should tell you a little bit about what he does build because it's fun. He makes these little nano cars, as he calls them, made up of simple elemental things like carbon and nitrogen, oxygen. And he puts in a little rotor paddle thing that when it gets light activated, it spins really fast and it moves the cars along a surface. So you can observe this motion, but you have to do it through a microscope because they're so small. And here's the latest thing he's done. It's very creative. I don't know if it was someone in his lab or whether it was Jim Tour himself who came up with the idea, but they stripped off the wheels of those little nano cars and tagged them with a molecular tag that recognizes cancer cells. And they then looked to see whether the molecular cars, the nano cars, would bind to the cancer cells, and they did. Then they light activated that little paddle, and it spun really fast and dug a hole in the membrane of the cancer cell, and within a minute, the cell was dead. So this is a case where you can actually target specifically cancer cells and kill them. It's a very exciting procedure, made the front cover of some big journals, and we can hope that it leads to a new treatment.
So he thinks it's impossible for random processes to make the components of a cell.
So let me read you a quote. It's called Dream On. The world's best synthetic chemists, biochemists, and evolutionary biologists have combined forces to form a dream team. A dream team in two quite distinct senses of the word. Money is no object. They have at their disposal the most advanced analytical facilities, the complete scientific literature, synthetic and natural coupling agents, and all the reagents their hearts might desire. Carbohydrates, lipids, amino acids, and nucleic acids are stored in their laboratories in a state of 100% enantiomeric purity. Would the dream team please assemble a living system? Take your time, folks. Take a few billion years. Nothing? Well, well, well. It's pretty clear he has a sense of humor.
And there is a lot more in the book Theistic Evolution, which we would encourage listeners to take a look at. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Dr. Gager.
Well, thanks. It was fun to be here.
This has been Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.